And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, this last week was some week. The State of the Union, which you thought, I thought, was going to be a high point of the week, of course, was almost swallowed up by the invasion of the Ukraine and everything that that implies and all the kinds of changes it's made in domestic and world politics. But before we get to the Ukraine, let's look at the State of the Union. What did you think of that speech? What did you think was Biden's... What was confronting him? What did he have to do, and how did he do?
Well, the second question, how did he do? Apparently, he did pretty well because, according to polls, his ratings, approval ratings, jumped 8 points, putting him up to 47. And that's a big jump. Usually, you get a couple points, maybe three or four, and very frequently, there's no bump at all. So he did pretty well. He came out and he showed the American people that he was the president. That's first and foremost, that he could deliver a speech, that he could touch on these topics, that he was knowledgeable and in control of things. And that's aimed at this recurring Republican meme that goes out there that he's weak or that he's not mentally fit to lead the country. They keep saying it, and if you listen to talk radio or you see things around, you talk to people like I do, you keep hearing these things. And of course, that's the power of propaganda. It's the power of repetition, which you've heard me say for years and years, is the key to winning communications. Ukrainian situation forced him to come out first and on top of that. But that's a winning argument for him, at least at this point, because the Russian side was the side taken by Donald Trump, Mike Pompeo, Fox News, Tucker Carlson, and what have you. And after months and months of repeating Russian propaganda, they either went silent or forced to eat some crow on that. And so Biden had the offense for a change. He wasn't playing defense. He had offense. And then he went into his domestic priorities as well. So I thought it came across pretty well. It wasn't any great rhetorical moment, so to speak, that we heard. There's not going to be any great quotes coming out of it, but it helped to restore, I think, somewhat of the competence issue that was lost over what happened in Afghanistan.
Well, what about the domestic parts of his speech? Do you think that was effective? I mean, it seems to me that what he needed to do there was somehow to figure out what to do with the Democratic Party, not so much with the nation.
Well, it's funny that you should say that, because once again, the Democrats can't leave well enough alone or are intent on snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. You know, there is always a opposition response to the State of the Union. And that,
well, there wasn't always. That's fairly new, isn't it?
Well,
I mean,
I can recall...
When it started.
It's been going on for, decades now,
yeah.
A couple decades
okay.
now. And the Republicans picked the governor of Iowa, and her response was pretty tone-deaf in many ways. But the Democrats decided we're going to have responses. They had Rashida Tlaib, member of the squad from Michigan, doing a progressive response. And then there was a Black Caucus response, and then there was a response, although he didn't call it a response, from these the more moderate centrist Democrats, you know, the problem solvers.
Well, what did they have to respond to? He wasn't. I mean, his whole talk was basically their point of view.
Well, I don't know anybody that really listened to this stuff, but it's just emblematic of the fact that they want to get out there and reassert their positions and say, look at us, we're the Democrats, we're divided. Come on. You get behind your president. It's bad enough the Republicans take shots at him. They've ruined his build back. Both sides have ruined his Build Back Better plan by their assertions. And of course, he didn't utter those words. Although he did say the one magic word, Scranton, once in his speech.
What was the magic word?
Scranton.
Oh, Scranton? But that's only a magic word for us.
Well, actually, it's a magic word, I understand, on college campuses where they have a drinking game.
Every time
it's mentioned, what have you. But he's trying to do that. And he's been, in Ukrainian situation, he's been very effective in terms of using the intelligence. Remember, Donald Trump poo-pooed American intelligence at Helsinki. He says, I believe Vladimir Putin. I don't believe what the American intelligence said about interfering with elections and all this other stuff. Biden, over the last several weeks, has been using American intelligence to sort of parry in advance Vladimir Putin's moves. And how he was going to justify going into the war in Ukraine. You know, it's also kind of interesting. And I saw a montage of this of all the Russian speeches and lies, both by Putin and by Lavrov, and by others, saying that we're not contemplating war, we're not going to do this, we're not going to bomb cities, we're not going to blah 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 blah. And, of course, all of that was just one big set of lies. So Biden also has, don't forget, he has a foil in this now. One of the reasons that his ratings were going down is that it was only looking at Biden and the administration. And, as you know, elections are really binary. And he didn't have an opponent to shoot at, so to speak, at this point in time. Well, now he does. He's got Vladimir Putin to shoot at. And he's got an ally in this, Volodymyr Zelensky, who has emerged to be at least at this point, a Churchillian figure in world politics. I think we mentioned last week his famous saying, I don't need ammo. I don't need a ride. I need ammo. And he continues to stand up and inspire things. Although there are very bad things happening in Ukraine, and there's other threats around the world.
So are you suggesting that the war is really playing the role for Biden, that Wag the Dog immortalized? Not that he started the war for that purpose, but he's benefiting in the same way.
Yeah, it's changed the dialogue, and it's changed the dynamics.
It's undermined Mitch McConnell's strategy, which was say nothing, do nothing, just attack Biden.
Right.
That can't be done. In this situation, that strategy no longer works.
No, and they don't have the stage for it. Their messaging is overwhelmed by the messaging that people see every night on television, and people I think are watching it. It's sort of like a bad car wreck. You know, they can't.
Let's play this out.
Looking at it,
let's play this out. What happens if Putin doesn't get beat? What happens if Putin's generals don't assassinate him? What happens if he emerges in control of the government and he captures the Ukraine? Then what?
Well, that's still an uncertainty. We don't know. And then we're on different territory there.
Do you think that
he's wrecked the Russian
forces
economy.
Have been unleashed, that forces will have been unleashed that will pr- prolong the war, that will expand the war, that will bring the war into direct conflict with NATO?
We don't know. We just don't know. We hope it doesn't. But
hope isn't good enough. What are the four? I mean, in this, you know, this is not India against Pakistan. This is the world in the balance.
Well, India against Pakistan is pretty serious. They're two nuclear nations.
I understand that. But if that's serious with two nuclear nations, which have a couple of hundred warheads between them, the Russians have 15,000 warheads and we have 14,000 warheads. That's even more serious.
And part of Putin's strategy has been to play what Donald Trump was said to have played, being erratic.
What he's really playing is the Nixon strategy, right? Make him believe I'm insane. Wasn't that what he told Kissinger? Make the Vietnamese believe I'm insane.
Yeah, I think that was part of it.
Yeah, well, it strikes me that's Putin's strategy. That's Putin's strategy. I don't think he's insane. You know, he may not be right, but I don't think he's insane.
No, but he's angry,
maybe.
And he's humiliated, and he's cornered.
Maybe he's just coldly calculating.
Well, certainly he's cold.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. But there's others around him who are feeling the pinch, his oligarch friends. The yacht club, so to speak, they're running around in a panic. I don't think they're enough to topple him, but you hear reports that, of course, since Putin controls the messaging in Russia, that the Russian people don't really have full knowledge of what's happening. Bodies, I understand, as before, are being brought back at night. They're even being burned. People are disappearing, and nobody can say anything or learn anything about this. And of course, this week he made the further move of shutting down the opposition press, not only in Russia but from the outside world. All the Western news agencies have stopped broadcasting from Russia because they're under threat of being arrested. Of course, and I think this again plays a little bit into Biden, because Putin is sounding so much more like Donald Trump, yelling fake news. And at least the American people are seeing things for themselves, and they know what is and what isn't fake.
There's no doubt that Putin has committed a crime against humanity. There's no question about
it. Yes.
But there's also no question that we confront the danger of a nuclear war through mischance, through an accident nobody wants.
Right.
But that's how the First World War started, an accident that nobody wanted. That's what happens in war. Plans don't work. Accidents work.
Sure.
That's the
plans
danger.
Plans only work until the first bullet flies.
Yeah, exactly.
And then
it's a dangerous situation. I know that there are thousands of Russian citizens that have already been arrested protesting the war, and we got to applaud them. We got to applaud those people, and then we got to demand somehow that the war stop. It can't, and the conditions for the war stop, and they got to work something out. That's all. They got to work something out. It's just not the case that every nation has the right to do what it wants to do. It has never been that way. Austria, after World War II, was made neutral. Japan was forced not to have offensive weapons, not to have an army, not to have nuclear weapons. It's that way today.
Right.
Countries are circumscribed in what their possibilities are, depending on circumstances. And it's for the good of humanity.
Yeah. But don't forget, now we have Germany bulking up. For years, Donald Trump used them as a whipping boy, saying they're not paying their fair share of NATO and this or that, but they're bulking up.
I'm just making the point that the Ukrainian people will say, people in the West say, and the Americans say, you can't. The American government says you can't tell the Ukrainians what they can belong to, and the answer is, of course you can, in the interest of world peace. Don't we tell the North Koreans you can't have these weapons. Don't we tell the Iranians you can't have these weapons? That's an abridgment of their sovereignty. They ignore it. But if we had the opportunity to enforce it, we would enforce it. Nobody says we shouldn't try to do that. Why? In the interest of world peace. Same with the Ukrainians. We don't want a war between the Russians and the Americans, or the Russians and NATO, even if the Russians are totally wrong. But the fact is, if they have the ability to destroy humanity, you have to say that's the basis for planning. We can't have the world we want. We can only have the world we have.
Yeah, but there is a difference between North Korea, Iran, and Ukrainians.
What's the difference? What's the difference?
Well, one's Ukraine's a democratic country.
No, but that's not important. The nature of the country is unimportant.
Part of the
issue
that we're going through.
It's the danger that the country faces and produces by its existence and by its actions that counts. The individual country doesn't count. And the Ukraine is not going to suffer because it's not a member of NATO. Ukraine isn't going to suffer for that reason.
No, but the fact of the matter is, Putin really didn't care as much about NATO as the fact that he just wants Ukraine to be a subservient part of this new Russian empire that he's trying to create.
I wouldn't argue with you. I think he does care about, by the way, I think he does care about the expansion to the east of NATO. Yeltsin cared about it. Putin's cared about it. He's made 100 speeches about it over the last 20 years.
Sure.
I think he does care about it. But I agree with you. He wants to reconstitute the Tsarist Empire. Fair. That's what he wants. We don't, and that's not a good thing. But you got to figure out a way to come to an agreement that says, okay, we will take into account what you say are your security concerns. We will figure out some way to settle them. You don't go any further than that. End of story. Why? Because the life in the world is at stake. Not because we want it, not because we think it's good, but because otherwise worse will happen. He has the power to make it worse.
Yeah, well, don't forget, Ukraine entered into one of those deals with Russia and the world.
It was the Ukraine
when they
that
gave
didn't
off the nuclear. They were the repository for a lot of nuclear weapons.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Well, listen to what you're saying here. We had an agreement, and now the agreement's no good because basically Vladimir Putin says it's no good.
He has the ability to kill you.
Yeah, and he has the ability to kill you. And now you're saying, let's make another agreement with a guy who we know agreements aren't any good with.
Well, we don't know that. We actually don't know that. The Americans had no particular need to expand NATO to the Ukraine or to the East at all. They had no reason to do that. They did it because they could do it. You recall that George Kennan said this is the greatest strategic era since the start of the Cold War. He said that. Others have also said that. The Cato Institute published an article about that just last week, saying exactly the same thing. These are not left-wingers. NATO didn't have to do this. They did it. The Americans did it because they felt they could get away with it. Well, they couldn't get away with it.
Yeah. Well, having you quote the Cato Institute is a new it's a new move.
I understand that, but I'm just saying that it's easy to see that different points of view looking at the American foreign policy say this was a wrong policy, both from the left and from the right. It was a policy from the right, they say it's a policy you can't sustain. You can't win in this policy. From the left, they say it's wrong to try to do this. You shouldn't have hegemony in that way. Either way, the fact is that laid the conditions for Putin to do what he did. All right, now he did what he did. Now, either you want to move on in this path and have war, world war, nuclear war, or somehow you got to figure out how to stop it. And it doesn't help to be triumphalist in language, because that doesn't help you to stop it. It doesn't help you to figure out a way to stop it.
I agree with that. Embarrassing the enemy doesn't
yeah.
help. We've had a couple of examples, in the Civil War, Lincoln did not want to embarrass the South. Remember, with malice towards none and charity towards all, had he lived, it would have been a different day in the nation. After World War I, the world went into this triumphal pattern of trying to punish Germany even further, and we wound up in World War II. But after World War II, we had the Marshall Plan. It not only helped the peoples of Europe, but it essentially stopped the Putins of the world from moving further.
But the point of all strategy is that you have to give your opponent a way out. If you don't give your opponent the way out, if you insist on unconditional surrender, you are also saying you got to fight to the death. We're in the world where you can't say fight to the death, because fighting to the death with nuclear weapons is
death.
A 24-hour proposition and end of civilization. It's a short war,
of course, which is why they had the theory of mutually assured destruction.
And this policy that we're now carrying out flies in the face of that. When you have jerks, demagogues, criminal elements like Lindsey Graham saying we have to have a no-fly zone over the Ukraine, does he know what he's talking about? Does he realize that what you're saying is you got to take out the Russian anti-aircraft batteries and you got to shoot down the Russian Air Force? Does he imagine that the Russians, any Russians, are going to put up with that? Forget Putin. Any of the general staff who might even want to get rid of Putin, if they'll put up with that? They won't put up with that for 10 minutes. No American would put up with that.
Yeah, well, with Lindsey Graham, you got to wait a couple of days and watch his positions change.
That's true. But you know, there's plenty of bipartisan support for a no-fly zone over the Ukraine. The congressman on the Democratic side, congressman on the Republican side, we got to do it. Why do we have to do it? How can
we do it?
What are you talking about? It's shooting yourself so that you'll cure your headache.
I think people are glad that they have Joe Biden at the helm and not Donald Trump at the helm.
That may be true, but Biden has to show us how we get out of here without ramping up the situation so that a military mishap can take place.
And we don't know what's happening behind the scenes.
We don't know what's happening even on the front lines, because there's nobody on the front lines. You can't even figure out what the status of the fighting is.
And the Russians don't seem to be able to figure out their own status.
That's their problem. You know, that's their problem. Yeah. But, you know, the breakout in the world is interesting. The Indians don't support the Western position. The UAW doesn't support. Most of the Middle Eastern countries don't go along with the NATO position. They've maintained neutrality. I mean, they're right there. They know what could happen. So it's extremely dangerous, and it's easy to just get sucked into a triumphalist framework. But that way lies the destruction of humanity. That's not a victory.
Well,
anyway.
So do we need to talk about, amid all this destruction, do we need to talk about domestic politics?
Well, this is domestic politics.
In a way.
That becomes domestic politics, because if this continues, that's what the election's going to be about. The Democrats will then win based on they'll be tougher. You can't be tougher than they are right now. There's nothing the Republicans can say that's going to say, I'll do more, except to say I'll do more by bombing Russia. I hope that wouldn't win the election.
I don't think that the Republicans, or at least the crazies that are now pretty much at the forefront of the party, have a real great foreign policy set of things. They're concentrating on domestics. Of course, they're
concentrating on keeping people from voting, like they did in Texas, where they managed to throw out 46% of the ballots that were mailed in, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's domestics. I don't know, what was it, 800,000 more Republicans voted in the primary than Democrats? That is not a great sign.
And I don't think those were the 46% that got tossed out.
No. Although the Republicans had more heated contests governor and for
they have guys under indictment running for big offices. They should have heated contests.
Attorney General. Yeah, well,
not every attorney general is under indictment, right?
No, not everyone, but it just seems that there are enough Republicans under under indictment or near indictment all over the place. You know, speaking of indictments, we had this turn in New York where it doesn't look like they're going to indict Donald Trump for, at least the Manhattan DA isn't going to indict Donald Trump.
But it's interesting. And you know why? It's because the new DA doesn't, the main witness they have against Trump's criminality, who can speak to his intent. You have to have criminal intent to be convicted. Right. And the main witness they have is Michael Cohen. And the new DA doesn't believe he'd be a credible witness. He thinks that they would be able to, you know, cast aspersions on him. Not that they would be able to call him a liar successfully, but that they could say, well, he's a bad guy and his testimony wouldn't be good. He's their main witness as to intent. So he says, unless we have a better witness than that, or at least something to back him up, we're not going to win, so why do it?
Right. He may be right on that.
And the guys who quit said, well, we should go ahead with this prosecution anyway. We got to do it for history's sake. But I don't think that that's the way prosecutors think, that they want to do it for history's sake and go down losing.
No.
Because if they lose, Trump wins.
Right, right. And meanwhile, here in Pennsylvania, we have the ongoing saga of the upcoming elections.
Yeah.
We're seeing some early polling coming out right now, but it's still early. The one thing is John Fetterman is way ahead in the polls to be the Democratic Senate race. And Dave McCormick, the Republican, seems to be emerging, although it's still a very, very low approval because there's a lot of unsures right now. And
do you think McCormick would be vulnerable to a Democratic charge, Shapiro's charge, that he's a turncoat Democrat, he's not really a Republican?
He
was a Democrat.
Yeah, he was a Democrat, and Mehmet Oz keeps going after him. He hasn't used that. I'd rather see him use that to undercut McCormick. But here's the thing, whoever emerges, and don't forget, Pennsylvania, it's not like down south where they have runoffs. You have to get 50% of you in a runoff.
Right.
So he could win this. Anybody could win this with maybe 35% of the vote.
Right.
But Republicans tend to get in line, and they desperately want to hold Pennsylvania.
Right.
But whether they can or they can't, we don't know. And I'm still worried about the gubernatorial race because the Republicans running for governor are all way out there.
But do you think Shapiro could really be beaten by any of those yo-yos?
Yeah, I think he can. The Democrats did not have a great showing down ballot in 2020, although Shapiro had was the one that led the ballot. They haven't attacked him yet, but I don't think he's a guy that takes things for granted. It's interesting. I've seen Dave White and Jake Corman are running against Tom Wolf.
Yeah, of course.
That they're going to do everything opposite of Tom Wolf.
Right.
And
they're going to get a businessman in there to run the state. Who the hell is Tom Wolf but a businessman?
Running the state. By the fall, if COVID has abated even further, people aren't going to be as upset about masks and mandates and things like that. So we'll have to see. And then we still don't know, as you've mentioned in the past, what's going to come out of the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And their radical opinions that could gin up the Democratic base. But the Democrats have to really get on the stick in terms of getting enthusiasm going. And,
on that note, we have to stop. That's a good note to stop on, by the way.
Yeah, I'm not enthused about having to stop, but we have to have to stop.
We have to stop. Well, let's hope that this war comes to an end somehow, comes to an abatement, that somehow the Russians stop, somehow that the danger of nuclear war disappears, or at least recedes greatly. Anyway, we'll see you in the coming week. I'll see you next week. I'll see you next week.
That's it.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.